A cannon thumped far off. A soldier came in from foraging, held a white chicken aloft, grinning. Kilrain said, "God damn all gentlemen." Chamberlain looked. Square head, white hair, a battered face, scarred around the eyes like an old fighter. In battle, he moved with a crouch, a fanged white ape, grinning. Chamberlain had come to depend on him. In battle, men often seem to melt away, reappearing afterward with tight, mirthless grins. But Kilrain was always there, eyes that saw through smoke, eyes that could read the ground. Chamberlain said suddenly, "Busta, tell me something. What do you think of Negroes?" Kilrain brooded. "There are some who are unpopular," he concluded. Chamberlain waited. "Well, if you mean the race, well, I don't really know." He hunched his shoulders. "I have reservations, I will admit. As many a man does, as you well know. This is not a thing to be ashamed of. But the thing is, you cannot judge a race. Any man who judges by the group is a peewit. You take men one at a time. And I've seen a few blacks that earned my respect. A few, not many, but a few." Chamberlain said, "To me, there was never any difference."
"None at all."
"None. Of course, I didn't know that many. But those I knew, well, you looked in the eye and there was a man. There was the divine spark, as my mother used to say. That was all there was to it. All there is to it." "We used to have visitors from the South before the war. Was always very polite. I never understood them. But we stayed off the question of slavery until near the end, out of courtesy. But toward the end, there was no staying away from it. And there was one time I'll never forget. There was this minister, a Southern Baptist, and this professor from the University of Virginia. The professor was a famous man, but more than that, he was a good man, and he had a brain. Rare combination." "True. Well, we sat drinking tea. Ladies were present. I'll never forget. He held the tea like this." Chamberlain extended a delicate finger. "I kept trying to be courteous, but this minister was so damned wrong and moral and arrogant all at the same time that he began to get under my skin. And finally he said, like this, 'Look here, my good man, you don't understand.' There was this tone of voice as if he was speaking to a stupid, dull child, and he was being patient but running out of patience. Then he said, 'You don't understand. You have to live with a Negro to understand. Let me put it this way. Suppose I kept a fine stallion in one of my fields, and suddenly one of your northern abolitionists came up and insisted I should free it. Well, sir, I would not be more astonished. I feel exactly that way about my blacks. And I resent your lack of knowledge, sir.'" Kilrain grunted. Chamberlain said, "I remember him sitting there, sipping tea. I tried to point out that a man is not a horse, and he replied very patiently that that was the thing I did not understand. That a Negro was not a man." Then I left the room. Kilrain smiled. Chamberlain said slowly, "I don't really understand it. Never have. The more I think on it, the more it horrifies me.
How can they look in the eyes of a man and make a slave of him and then quote the Bible?